This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm great, Dean. How are you doing?
I am really, really good. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Winter's coming. I will say that it's windy at my place today. Leaves are blowing all over the place, and many leaves have dropped, and the temperatures are also dropping.
Yes, indeed. But it's actually been quite balmy this week. We've had some beautiful, beautiful weather. I don't know. I've just really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Great week to be out in the garden. Oh, I got so much. Ellie and I got a lot done. It was very, very effective. We're quite pleased. The new garden I was telling you about last week. Well, it's not so much new, but we had a retaining wall put in. So we finished that all up, got the edging around the rest of the garden, got 4 yards of soil put into the garden. And that's where I'm planting today, mark my words, today, garlic is going in, and a bulb that you may or may not have ever heard of called Fritillaria imperialis.
It sounds impressive.
It is. It's an imperial.
It sounds a bit intimidating.
It's a big word. Two big words. But yes, pretty funky bulb. So I'll be putting those in today into that garden.
Okay. I'll tell you what. Let's talk about, I want to hear about that bulb. Okay. I want to give out the numbers. And then I think you have a couple of announcements. Is that correct?
Good point. Yep.
Okay. So let me give out the numbers. 360-0740. That's the Toronto number. Again, 416-360-0740. Or toll free anywhere else in the province of Ontario outside Toronto, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Ash know if you're a first-time caller. I will give you your well-earned garden wings. We want you to call often. Please call early, and please, 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 one question per call. Okay, what do you got, Charlie?
All right, just quickly, speaking of bulbs, the Greater Toronto Bulb Society is meeting tomorrow, Sunday, October 29th, 1:30 p.m. at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, upstairs in one of the studio rooms. Visitors are welcome. And of course, there's a flower show also happening as part of the meeting. And they are going to be listening to somebody named Judy Zinni, who is presenting Gesneriads, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but Gloxinia is an example of many, many plants grow from tubers and bulbs that we don't even think about. So that's happening tomorrow. Also, the Toronto Japanese Garden Club has a big 71st annual fall flower and bonsai show going on tomorrow. That's from noon until 4:30. And if you've never been to a bonsai show, I recommend going to one. You'll just get your socks blown off. The admission is $5 a person. They meet at the JCC, which is the part of the Toronto Japanese Garden Club's meeting area. It is at 6 Sakura Way, formerly known as Garamond Court in Don Mills. So for any more information, they are on Facebook. But noon to 4:30, there's Ikebana, bonsai, speakers, demos, plant sale, tea room, pumpkin decorating.
Okie dokie. Okay, we have to take our first break, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on the last Saturday of October, right there, Charlie? Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Halloween's coming. Are you going out for Halloween?
Well, you know what? My kids are of an age where it's no longer a thing to go out, really. But we'll be at home. In fact, they've now even shifted into the, giving out the candy kind of
that's
jobs.
That's good.
They, They like to do that as well. Yeah. Okay, let's go to our first caller. We're going to Mississauga. Yeah, we're going to speak to Hazel. Welcome to the Garden Show, Hazel.
Good morning. Thank you.
Morning.
I have a question about a lucky bamboo plant that I purchased, probably about 4 years ago in one of those glass containers with the in water.
Yes.
It's now about over 2 feet tall, and I'm thinking it should come out of that container. What do I need to do? Is there anything special I need to do?
Well, I imagine the container is full of roots, right?
Probably. It's got those black little bits around it.
Right. It's not a clear glass container then?
It's a clear glass container, but it's got like little black stones or something, so I can't really see through. But I'm thinking,
They call it lucky bamboo because it is supposed to be lucky. It's supposed to bring you money and luck and all kinds of wonderful things.
Well,
it's a good question.
So
you
it's working.
Yeah, good, good. So I would, if it's been that long in the glass jar, you're going to have to take the whole thing apart.
You're cutting out. Maybe I'm not far enough from my radio. I will turn it off.
Oh, yes, please. Definitely turn off your radio.
I'm still losing you.
Okay, so you're back. All right, so main thing is, you're just going to have to lay out some newspaper, pull the bamboo out of the jar, the glass container, carefully lift all the rocks away from the roots, and then you would just get an all-purpose potting mix. Make sure it's nice and it's a sterile, brand-new bag, nice and clean. Clean pot with drainage and pot the plants up. You can pot them together or separately. It's up to you. And then, keep them in the same kind of situation you've got them in. So I imagine you're kind of half day sun or half day shade, bright, but no direct sunlight required. Good indirect
sunlight.
Sorry, I
didn't hear any of that. I'd have to listen to the podcast. It just wasn't
all right,
through.
Thanks for calling, Hazel. Yeah, you should just hang up and listen to the podcast, which will be up and available to be listened to by Wednesday this week at the latest. And, of course, it's am740.ca, podcasts, The Garden Show.
You got it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We've got Diane calling from Dorchester. Welcome to The Garden Show, Diane.
Hi, thanks, Dean and Charlie, for taking my call. I always trim back my peonies all within maybe 6 inches of the ground. And a friend just sent me, it's called For Stem Nesting Bees. And they're telling you, now, are peonies, do they have hollow stems?
Mm-hmm, yes, they do.
That's what
they
I thought.
Do. Yeah.
Yes, because it says here in the winter, bees hibernate in stems during the winter. And then in the spring, you're supposed to cut back the dead flower stalks, leaving stem stubble about 8 to 24 inches to provide nest cavities. And then it said the female bees find the cut openings, and they start a nest, then lay an egg on the pollen balls. And then the larvae eat the pollen. And then during the summer, it said the bee larvae develop in the cut dead stems during the growing season. So, and then in another article from our horticulture group that just came out on Wednesday, it says the very same thing, that you should leave one area, and in particular, they're saying cone flowers. It said in the fall, leave a spot for bees to overwinter in the hollow stems of cone flowers and in the sheltered areas. And believe it or not, it said, I didn't know this. I have never thought about bees having to drink water. But it said to make sure you leave water out somewhere during the winter so that bees, if they're not hibernating, that they require water.
All living things require water. I know we don't sort of take it down to that level, but you know what? There's something I'm going to be sort of setting up in the next few weeks. I have a bird bath and a bird bath heater. So it's an electric little heater that I got from the Urban Nature store. I'm going to set that up. So I'm going to have open water all winter for obviously the birds. And like you said, you never know when the bees go in or out of hibernation. We never know when it's really going to be winter or not, right? The autumn can go on for months and months and months, and who knows when spring is going to start. So open water is really important for all the little beasties. When you mention like peonies and echinacea, yes, I am not a fan of the scorched earth methodology of putting the garden to bed for winter. Like, I don't clear my gardens. I let a lot of the foliage drops to the ground where it proceeds to decompose over the winter and spring, whether it's hosta leaves, things like echinacea, rudbeckia or black-eyed Susan, lots and lots of seeds on those plants. So I leave those for the finches and whoever else, winter birds who love those seeds. But I do cut down my peonies. I never can cut them down early enough in the spring if I don't get to them in the fall. They come up so early. And they also are very susceptible to fungal diseases.
Yeah, so that was my biggest concern, because these plants, my mom had them at least 50 years before she sold her house, and I went and got them because they came from our original, like my grandparents. And so I have them, and I've been trying to keep them going, and I gave my daughter one of them. And they are so gorgeous. You know, like I see other people's in their garden, but these are of the old heritage ones, and I don't want to lose them by doing, you know, just because, you know, I do have the cone flowers and that. I will leave them, and the hosta and everything. This year, I guess I get off easy in the fall, but in the in the spring, I'll have to get my work gloves out. Okay, take care. And
very,
thank very,
so good.
Very
Thanks
very
for
much.
Calling.
I
good
wanna
yeah,
help
points.
The bees, though.
Thanks
I
for
do
the call.
Help
nice.
The bees. Yeah. Okay.
Always nice to have a little chat about bees there.
I know. Okay. Especially as winter's coming. Yeah, it's great.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Your comment about water, a very good one as well, and one that we all have to keep in mind. And I think you're right. We don't think that the small little creatures need water, but everything does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are going to take our next break, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And the numbers again to give us a call, 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. Or toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. And I would suggest that this next caller use the toll-free number. We're going to Hamilton. And we've got Gene on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Gene.
Good morning, yes, and thank you. I've just got a question about an umbrella tree. Mm-hmm. How can I control it? It's I'm growing it too well. I've had it for years, and I've tried everything to get it under control, and it's nothing is working. It's just growing and growing, and it keeps bending over, of course. I staked it during the summer to try and straighten it up, but there was no luck. I had changed it to a larger pot, thinking that might help. All it did was grow another small one coming up. It's about 2 foot tall. This one is about 6 foot. Can I cut it off, or what can I do? I don't want to throw it out.
No, of course not. No. Well, and it's interesting when you mentioned the bigger pot. Always know, I mean, at the beginning of the show, we were talking briefly about bonsai and the show in Toronto tomorrow. Bonsai is a way of growing plants to keep them small. And they might be 150 years old, but they're tiny, tiny little plants, you know, a foot or two tall.
I've seen them. They're beautiful.
Part of the way that they are controlled is with tiny little pots. So very few roots because very small pots. So obviously when we give our plants bigger pots, we give them the opportunity for more roots, which means grow, grow, grow. So yeah, 6 foot tall indoor plant can be a little bit challenging. But if you've got a daughter plant coming from the base, so the little 2 footer you referred to, is it actually a separate plant, or is it attached to the stem of the mother plant?
I can't really tell. It looks as if it's separate, but I mean, it's very close to the mother plant. And of course, I think I'd have to take it out of the pot to find out where the roots were, because there is a space until you hit the dirt. And then, of mm-hmm. course, it's closed right in and it's hard to tell.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a couple options. The big, tall 6-footer, you could do a pretty radical pruning back on that plant, bringing it to a more controllable size. But that now is not the optimal time to do that. The optimal time would be to do that in the late winter. If you want to say, no, I'm just happy with a little 2-footer, then get out a big pair of loppers and just lop out the big guy, leave the little one in the pot for now, dispose of all the large mother plant and let it do its thing over the winter. And then in the spring, you could lay it all out, pull it out of the pot and see what's going on, getting rid of perhaps the roots of the mother plant because the other little one is separate or not. Maybe the little one is growing off the same roots and you would just maybe trim some roots away and then put it all back in the pot. But either way, don't be afraid. They are pretty tough plants. They're pretty easy to grow. And you've obviously, that's your biggest problem, is it's too easy to grow. So yeah, just know that this isn't the optimal time for major pruning.
Okay, that's fine. And so I could do it in the late winter, like maybe Christmas, New Year's or something like that.
Or even more like Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
Well, as long as I know I can do some. I just didn't want to cut it off and then kill the whole plant.
Yeah, you won't. If you cut off the mother plant, I think the daughter will thrive. If you chop down the mother plant, it may die if you chop it now.
Oh, okay. No, I'll wait until the Valentine's then. That'll be my Valentine's gift to myself.
There you go. Thanks for calling.
I'm a first-time caller, but I've listened to you for many years, and thank you very much for all the help you have given me.
Oh, my pleasure.
And did you say you're a first-time caller?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
There we are. There's your garden wings.
Don't be a stranger.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye.
Charlie, I have to say that Jean's description of her umbrella tree there mm-hmm. reminded me of an email that you got this week of the it's a tree from Hawaii. Is it a kaumani?
Yeah, it's not a tree I am familiar with, but yes, it's one of those tropical trees. Yes, kaumani tree.
And they can really thrive, I guess, the inside, given the right conditions.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like any of our tropical plants. I mean, look around your house. You have jade plants, you might have Diefenbachia, croton, all kind, hibiscus. These are plants that are serious plants when you get to the tropics. And that's one of that was so fun when I was teaching students, because they would, maybe have enough money to go for a trip to Dominican Republic or something over March break. And then they'd come back and go, oh my gosh, all those plants we've been learning about in those little pots, they're like hedges when I went, went down
right.
south. They're cutting them with, chainsaws, and here we are coddling them in little pots. So, yes, yeah, exactly. It's a good point. Rick, it was Rick Sipos. Yeah, sent a photograph of a tree that he's growing at home he's growing from seed that he picked up when he was in Hawaii. So, good for him. He also sent a nice poem. Did you want to just share the poem that our listeners might enjoy?
Yeah, let me just you've got it there. You go ahead.
Okay, so this is from Rick, written by Rick this past week, and it's just timely, right? Dry leaves lie in a heap. At the end of this day, my garden is going to sleep. I give thanks for this year. It gave an abundance to reap, but now it is all too clear. My garden is going to sleep. Soon the snow will drift, thick and cold and deep. It is a blessing and a gift, for my garden is going to sleep. But I believe spring will come again. Life will once more leap. There will fall a gentle warm rain to rouse my garden from its sleep. Thanks, Rick. Nice.
Yeah, as you say, how apropos.
Yes, exactly. And one more thing about this time of year,
Yeah.
Get to the garden centers. Everything's on sale.
Oh, right. Yeah, you were saying it. What would be things that you would specifically look for this time of year?
Well, when I say everything, plants. Generally, garden centers clear as much inventory as they can before winter, just because they have to overwinter these plants. Yeah. And they take up space, and they can get eaten by mice and all that sort of thing. So they are a bit of work as they go into winter. So, you know, I, with my new retaining wall garden, I'm looking at it going, I would like some carpet junipers, you know, blue rug sort of junipers to grow down that wall. It's only an 18-inch wall, but it would soften the bricks. I was like, maybe I'll just head over to my garden center and see if they have any still in stock, because I'm sure they'll be on sale.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. We're going to Etobicoke right now. We have Helen on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Helen.
Oh, hi there. Welcome. I mean, glad it's a beautiful, beautiful day out here. And I just wanted to ask a question about a Rose of Sharon that somebody had given me a cutting from it, and maybe it's about 2 feet tall. Last Sunday, I put it in the ground. This is just very recent. And I put some fertilizer in there, watered the hole, gosh knows how many times, because we'd had such a drought. And I stuck it in there and tamped it down, and now it looks pretty good. Is there anything else I should do before the snow flies?
Nope. You've done it all. I wouldn't, just so you know, I wouldn't normally fertilize when I plant, other than with a root-stimulating fertilizer, so a plant start kind of fertilizer.
Yes, yes.
In the fall, that anytime we plant a plant, the main thing is good soil, and in the case of Rose of Sharon, full sun, well-drained, not a soggy area, and into the ground and watering, good point. Don't water it every day. Just, you know, good thorough watering when you plant. And then as we get further towards winter, you know, we may have to water a couple of times. I know I'll be on watering my evergreens before winter, so because it's been quite dry where I live as well. But yeah, it's a pretty tough plant. It'll be just fine for the winter, I'm sure.
Well, I did put, I forgot to mention just now, I did put some plant starter that was 10-52-10 into the into the hole after or before I watered and while I was watering, and not too much actually because I didn't know whether I should have or not, but I did put it in the hole and watered and watered and watered. So it's looking pretty grim now, but then the leaves what were there were falling off, but they would have in normal times, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. And remember with Rose of Sharon, next spring, you're going to think it's dead because everything around it is going to be perking up and growing leaves and happening because it's spring. And your Rose of Sharon is going to be sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. And you're going to go, oh, no, it's dead. It's dead. And then one day you're going to look and you'll see little green buds. That's always the last one to leaf out.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you told me that because I would have been wondering away about what I did wrong this fall.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm sure it'll be fine. It's like I said, as long as you've got full sun and well-drained soil, it'll be fine.
Oh, great. And I just have to tell you one thing, and then I know I'm not going to talk about it, but I have a zygote cactus in the house, and it is so beautiful. It's a pink thing, and it's just, there are so many buds on it, and I'm just delighted with it. It just kind of makes my day when I see it in the morning, you know?
Nice. I agree. Nothing makes me smile more than blooming plants on my desk or in my place.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Helen. Yeah. Thanks so much. Glass half full, Helen.
Yeah. No kidding. Or fully full.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, I've heard you say this before, and I think this is a mistake that I would make as well. This would be this idea of fertilizing when you first plant or doing too much in the fall. I would, as you were saying it again, because I've heard you say it to many, many callers over the time that I've been with you, I suppose it would be like, you know, getting into bed with a hamburger and fries and just before you go to sleep, which is probably not the best thing to do, right?
Kind of. Yeah. Good analogy, I guess. well, keep in mind that when we plant plants, The most important thing, whether we're planting in the spring or planting in the fall, the most important thing is for the plant to get established. And an established plant has a very well-grown root system. So if we're going to encourage anything, let's encourage roots when we first plant a plant. Don't worry about flowers and leaves and all that other stuff. It'll come later. The first thing is the roots.
Okie dokie. Okay, now I know I have a caller on the line from Newmarket, but I have to take a quick break, so we'll be right back with that caller and much more here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show, and we have a very, very patient caller from Newmarket on the line. We're going to Jean. Welcome to The Garden Show, Jean.
I'm not that patient. I am your best fan ever. I will wait for you. Charlie, please.
I appreciate you waiting.
Oh, and Dean, I enjoy your Sunday night show. You have made classical music come alive for me. Listeners, try it. Pardon?
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Charlie, my very best. Yes. I bought a cactus at the grocery store. It's just a single cactus, and it's 3 inches long, and I talked to it on the way home, and I said, don't worry, Charlie will keep you alive. What do I do?
Is it by any chance a Christmas cactus, you know, the ones that have little buds on them now, non-prickly?
Jean, are you there? Oh. Hello. Jean, did we lose Jean?
I think so. I would think if somebody's buying a cactus at this time of year, it's probably a Christmas cactus.
Okay, yeah.
So that's because remember with cacti,
yeah,
there's two big categories. One are the prickly ones, which are desert cactus.
Yes.
And the other are the non-prickly ones, which are forest cacti. So where they naturally occurred, where they evolved to survive, was mm-hmm. the desert or the forest. So the Christmas cactus, the ones that are in bud now and blooming, and of course, you know, Jean just said the same thing, that you know she's loving her blooming cactus. So it's a forest. They are designed to be happy in the forest. They still want good bright spot. They can be in direct sunlight, but they definitely need a good bright spot. And they're only watered when the soil is very dry.
Charlie, we have Jean back, by the way, just on the line. She's going to engage her again. So there she is.
Here I am. Charlie, it's like what I saw in Arizona. You know how they're just a big fat cactus that grows up. It's not a Christmas because I have a Christmas.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah. So yeah, there's all kinds of different prickly cactuses, cacti. Main thing is, and it might even be sort of what's called a barrel cactus, you know, the round. So what are you going to do? The cacti that have this Arizona feel to them, you have to mimic the environment that you saw in Arizona for this plant to be truly happy for the location for this plant. So direct sun in your brightest window. If it's on a window ledge, remember you never want plants to touch the glass, particularly in the winter, because we get that cold, cold glass in the winter. And this is a plant that likes a cool night, but wants a nice, hot, sunny day. So, and that's pretty easy usually for us to mimic at home, because when the sun goes down, our houses typically cool off. When the sun is out, and when the sun is up and the plants are in the window, they're getting that nice, you know, radiant heat off the sun coming through the window. The couple of things always everybody should be thinking about right now, tropical plants, whether they're cacti or, you know, peace lilies or whatever they are, lucky bamboo, they do not want to be in drafts. So no open windows or nowhere near a front door that is used in the winter, none of that cold draft, but also hot drafts. Be very, very aware of the vent, the furnace vent, and the hot air that's blowing out of your vents, which is very not good for most tropical plants. They hate the hot, dry wind like that. So get vent deflectors, or maybe you live in a situation with steam heat, and then, you know, life is a whole different situation. But if you have hot air forced furnace, make sure you're deflecting that dry air away from your plants.
Okay. Thank you. That's all. Bye now.
Okay. Thanks, Gene. When you said Arizona, yeah, reminded me of the Roadrunner. Coyote, all the cactus. Yeah, that was what we saw, right? All the cacti.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, took us back there. Right on.
I know. Okay. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the cartoon.
All the cartoon. No, it's great. Yeah, the rocks falling and.
Oh yeah, and always getting impaled on a cactus.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay, let's go to Markham now. We have Elaine on the line, and so welcome to the Garden Show, Elaine.
Hi, Charlie and Dean. Yeah.
Good morning.
Well, I'll tell you. I was out yesterday. I came home, and I was totally horrified. The gardeners had come along and cut down my beautiful mophead hydrangea down to 12 inches.
Mm. It won't kill it.
Never have it cut down until the spring.
Right. So it's just, I hate cutting them down because they're so pretty in the winter.
I know.
But it's not a bad thing necessarily. It's just you've lost the ornamental value of those flowers all winter. Mm-hmm. What I would do in the spring is cut it down further. Once the growth starts. If it's 12 inches now, you want it to be about 4 inches in the spring.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But wait until the growth starts. Wait until you start to see the little green buds on those 12-inch stems, little pairs. They're opposite to each other, little green round buds. As soon as you start to see those fattening up and they're quite evident, cut down to 4 to 6 inches tall.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Oh, I was horrified. Oh, my gosh.
Sounds like the other thing that got lost might have been the contract for the gardeners.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's one of the things about fall gardening is that's that scorched earth policy I referred to at the top of the show. Clean everything up, you know, cut it all down, get it off the property. The soil tends to blow away or erode through wind or water, or snow, runoff. I'm a much bigger fan of leaving some debris in my gardens, not on the lawn, but in the gardens.
Yeah. Okay.
Clean it up in the spring. Thanks for calling, Elaine.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah, I feel your pain, but you know what? It's good to know that they'll come back and they'll be strong again in the spring.
I think so.
Okie dokie. Okay, we have to take our final break, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, we're back here in the Garden Show, and Charlie, I'm pretty sure that every one of the flowers that we just heard about in that song are all going to bed for the winter.
Oh, I think so.
I'm still fascinated about the fact that you plant garlic now, and that it loves the cold, you know, because, you know, it loves to be cold for the winter.
Think of tulips and daffodils. If you don't plant those out now and you leave them in your kitchen drawer, then they will not flower next spring. They will grow, but there'll be no flowers. So the temperature has a lot to do with the initiation of certain physiological changes in plants. So the cool winter underground for garlic, for tulips, for daffodils, it's all about initiating that flower bud down deep inside the bulb, which comes up in the spring.
Yes, it is fascinating. It is fascinating.
No, it's cool. Plants are cool.
They are cool. Okay, let's go to Ellen, and she lives in a cool place. She lives in Brantford. Welcome to the Garden Show, Ellen.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Morning. My question today is I have a self-seeded pine tree. It's now about 2 feet tall, and it's in a bad spot, and I'd like to relocate it. I understand this is the right time of year, but that's about all I know about it if I dig it up and move it.
This is a good time to dig up now or even a month ago, because as we head into winter, plants are slowing down, but the soil is nice and warm still. And as mentioned earlier, it's all about the roots. digging up a pine, the only thing tricky that's different on a pine than, say, a, you know, a peony, is that pine trees have a tap root. They use that tap root for structural anchorage. As they get big and tall, they are able to withstand big wind. That tap root is absolutely imperative. If it gets broken off in the transplanting process, the plant will die. So if it's about 2 feet tall, you're going to need to dig down at least a foot and a half to include that tap root when you're moving it. So just plan a spot where you're moving to, make sure it's wide open, full sun, reasonably good soil, and then get that 2 foot tall pine dug out with soil attached to the roots when you make the move. If it's really dry, if your soil is super dry, I know mine has been like a sandbox, then water first. Watering first will help with holding the soil to the roots as you take it across to its new location. And of course, water it in once it's there.
Right. And could I wait until the spring if, as you said, maybe a month ago might have even been appropriate to move it? Would it be okay in the spring?
Yeah, spring is fine as well because they're coming out of plants are coming out of dormancy. The soil is cool, so that we get very slow growth initially because the soil is so cool. But nothing saying you can't do it in the spring. It's just a matter, again, of same preparation I was referring to. Get the hole organized, right, and make sure you've got whatever you need. People will often use bone meal to encourage roots or a plant starter type fertilizer.
And is that okay at this time of year as well as the spring, the bone meal, or would I not do that at this time of year? It's okay?
Yeah. No, it's fine. Again, it's a rooting stimulating for the root growth. Right. And in the nice warm soil, the roots will grow. It's amazing. They've done underground photography of when you plant a tulip bulb, and it's within like 45 minutes of planting a tulip bulb at this time of year, the roots start to grow. It's amazing.
Oh,
like right before your very eyes.
I'll have to share a funny story with you that I think everybody will get a laugh of. I heard your earlier caller talking about the, what do they call them, butterfly bush? I probably pulled one out every year for about 4 years before I realized it wasn't dead. It was just slow.
Oh, the Rose of Sharon. Yes.
Rose of Sharon, So now I have a new one. Anyway, thank you very much for your help.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call there, Ellen. Okay, we're going to go, Joe, right now to our next caller, who's a first-time caller. We've got Steve on the line from Buffalo, New York. Welcome to the Garden Show, Steve.
Good morning, Mr. Dean and Charlie.
There's your garden wings, my friend.
Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. And the question is, could you get a miniature rosebush to survive the winter in the house? There's one blooming it now.
Sorry, this is a miniature rose, did you say?
Yeah, miniature rose. Will they survive in the winter in the house and maybe bloom?
Yeah, maybe. There's different kinds of miniature roses. Did you buy it or somebody give it to you?
It's my sister. She bought it at the supermarket.
Right, and it was inside the store when she bought it, like in with all the other African violets and all that sort of thing, as far as you know?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so they're probably better inside than outside. They're a little challenging to keep them alive over the winter, depending on, again, exactly what kind of rose and exactly what you've got in your garden. But for your purposes inside, full sun, just like the cacti we were talking about, nice sunny window, bright sunny spot, only water, like feel the soil. If it's flowering right now, you are going to want to not let it dry to complete dry soil like you would with a cactus, but keep it so when it starts to get a little bit dry, the surface of the soil, water with room temperature water, keep a very close eye on the plant. The miniature roses have a tendency to develop insects. You might see whitefly, you might see, believe it or not, even aphids. You never know. So just keep a real close eye on the plant. If it's blooming right now, then organize some fertilizer, flowering plant fertilizer, and use that when you're watering every 3 weeks. It might keep flowering all winter for you if you can give it the conditions it likes. So bright sun, nutrient, moisture, and no drafts.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I gave it some rose stone about a week and a half ago, so.
Okay. That's good. Okay. Yeah, that's, you know, to fertilize your plants in the house, you know, to fertilize them when they are blooming, when they're actively providing beauty for you. So Christmas cactus, we're fertilizing them now. But orchids, if they're, you know, getting ready to bloom, we're fertilizing them now. But generally speaking, we don't do a lot of fertilizing of our indoor plants in the winter unless they're blooming.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, going to jump right into the next call. We'll see if it's a quick one. I've got Mary on the line from Toronto. What do you got there for us, Mary?
Hello?
Hey. Morning.
Yeah, what do you got there, Mary?
Hello?
Hello, we're here. Turn your radio down, please.
Hello?
Hello? Mary, can you hear us?
Yes. A quick question. I know I shouldn't repot it, but my crown of thorns, the pink one, mm-hmm. I'm going to leave it. It's blooming. The other white one has got big buds, and the one I really needed to repot, the original old one, the dark pink, mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. showed a bud in the last few days, like the soil's like cement. Uh-huh. I desperately need to repot that, and I want to put the white one with it. What can I do? Can I repot it now? I really, especially the old one.
Quickly, I'll just have to answer this because we are out of racetrack, unfortunately. The now is not the optimal time to be transplanting any of our indoor plants. However, if the concrete-like soil and the roots are growing out the bottom of the pot, or the pot is broken because the roots are just, so full that the pot breaks, then you have to do it. If you can hold off, I would hold off till spring. But, you got to do what you got to do. And you can just make sure you got fresh soil. And when you do take the plants out of the pot, loosen the roots. If they're all if it's very root bound, you might need to remove some roots, loosen the roots. If they're growing in a spiral, just make it so it's a happy place for these two plants to be together in the same pot. Thanks for calling, Mary. We have to go. Thanks, Dean.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ashi. Couldn't do any of this without either of you and the great callers. See y'all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.